Welcome, everyone, to the next edition of the BPSAA podcast. This podcast is featuring members of the BPSAA, including Conceal, Dragon Chain, Etho Protocol, and people from Polarity. And for those of you who don't know who Polarity is an exchange. So the topic for today is risk mitigation for projects and individuals. Now, that may seem kind of boring, but this is probably one of the most important topics that can be discussed within crypto. So I highly recommend you listen in and check out what everyone has to say. So does everyone want to go through a quick intro about themselves?
Sure, I'll give a quick introduction. I'm known as the Gray Wolf. I've been around cryptocurrency since about 2015-2016, and I've been involved with the BPSAA projects. Some of those you may know, which are Turtle Network, Pirate Chain, Etho Protocol, and under that, there are some projects, including Komodo and others.
All right, I'll jump in next. I'm Hash Rates from Etho Protocol. I'm in charge of business development. And we were the ones that had, I'm not going to mention any names, but we'll just say a significant founding member of our project, kind of what we assume went bad on us. And so we learned a lot from that. We look forward to sharing that today. So other projects, whether they're part of the BPSA or not, can hopefully learn not learn the hard way, and we can extract some value from what happened.
All right, I'm Joe Roach. I'm a founder and architect of Dragon Chain. I've been in crypto since 2010. I'm a 25-plus year software architect. I've had various contributions to Coinbase, Overstock, Disney, and Lockheed Martin. And I'm still at Dragon Chain and, doing the blockchain scalability and security thing.
Hey guys, I'm Cryptator. I'm a marketing manager at Conceal. I've been in the crypto community since 2017. My background is in corporate finance. So I'm trying. That's it.
And last but not least, I'm Draith, your host. I am a captain over at Pirate Chain, the founder of the BPSAA, and I am a project advisor over at Nightlife Crypto. And I've been in crypto since 2016. So, alrighty. So, topic of the day, as I said, risk mitigation. So, does anybody want to give their quick thought on what risk mitigation is?
What I could do, Drake, is talk a little bit about what happened and kind of put it in perspective as a talking point, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, with regards to risk mitigation, of course, that's pretty straightforward. That's trying to minimize your risk of your cryptocurrency project. And to frame it from the event at Etho Protocol, I think is unique, particularly for a lot of small projects, and try to put that in perspective. So, is being part of a small or an upstarting cryptocurrency project, everybody's short on resources. And therefore, when you have an individual or individuals that step up and are contributing, you want to encourage that, right? Because basically everybody volunteers here in crypto, at least a lot of projects, not a lot of paid developer jobs, especially in the early days. And so you assume that just because somebody volunteers and they do work that, you kind of take that. And of course, with that volunteering, there's not a lot of oversight just because you don't have the overhead of oversight. when you've got a lead developer or somebody that's helped start the project and they're spending an inordinate amount of time and they're building different, let's say, different extensions, protocols, bridges, gateways, and all these tools that make a cryptocurrency project focus, it's difficult keep an eye on everything. And then also, in you know, with regards to documentation as well, I'm not a developer, so to speak, but I've done enough development to recognize that development in itself can almost, the documentation of development can almost take more time than developing it. And so when you've got somebody that's banging out code in the middle of the night and they're working on Solidity and smart contracts and all these things, and they're testing and they're running and they're developing and they're testing, and hours and hours and hours of being deep in the woods, to then go out and take that entire experience and memorialize it in GitHub is extraordinary. And so I think one of our takeaways is that at least at Etho Protocol, one of the things that we found was the lack of documentation from our development team, because there's so many people in the process and doing so much work, and just getting the work done in itself is extraordinarily difficult, let alone having the overhead and the people to document all the work that gets done. So what I would say, at least from a standpoint, that you know, you have to trust people in this business. It'd be nice that if every single wallet and every single thing you did was multi-signature, but quite honestly, multi-signature does not necessarily apply to all things. For example, if you talk about, let's say, your domain name, right? And we have our friends at Handshake, and they've got decentralized domains and all that, and that adds to that. But I think all the projects here, for example, have got a domain name. And our domain name is at Namecheap. That's where we have the ethoprotocol.com domain name. Well, that DNS provider does not provide multi-sig for domain name access. There's a username and a password, which means that anybody that has that can affect the domain name, right? And so therefore, you have to trust people with that. So this idea in cryptocurrency that we live in two different worlds. We live in the perfect decentralized crypto blockchain world where everything's decentralized and it's all protected. But quite honestly, that's not the real life case. Real life case is a lot of things that you do are also in the traditional centralized world, because the tools just don't exist like a traditional domain name provider with multi-sig protocol for your domain name ownership and management, right? It just isn't there. And so it's almost impossible to put, let's say, blockchain type technology security on every single aspect of a project. So since you can't do that, the next step best thing that you can do is try to have better documentation, I would say. A lot of the work that was done by this particular individual was not documented as well as we would have liked, so we had to reverse engineer a lot of things. So try to keep up your documentation, because that is something that people can do. And then when you have an individual that has a particular key or access to a singular device, you need to at least have two or three other people that have that same access. You hope that you can catch that particular individual before they go rogue, and then try to change that singular point of access within your group. That's what we've done now. As we're still looking for multi-sig protocol stuff. So that's kind of the quick takeaway from what we experienced. We had a very significant contributing member go rogue on the project. They still controlled a lot of the intellectual property or had not published it. And so besides going rogue with bridges and other things, we also had some difficulty with trying to reverse engineer it, which we've now successfully done, and we're doing a better job of it. So that's a very, very broad takeaway on the event that what happened. So, for what that's worth. So, I wanted to share that perspective.
Thank you, Hashrates, for sharing that. That whole discussion really begins to kind of dive into the kind of overarching topic of today of risk mitigation, and also highlights one of the most important facts about cryptocurrency that I think is most relevant to today, is that what cryptocurrency really does is provides accountability, right? So if we structure an operation, maybe it's a gateway operation, or maybe it's a bridge operation, you know as soon as you structure it who holds what keys. And from there, everything's on chain. So if there's an action that occurs, you have a direct line of accountability that you can now dial back to actually go, hey, yo, WTF, what was up with that? And why did you propose that transaction?
Cool. Does anybody have any other examples or theoretical things that could happen in terms of risk with projects or, hell, even individuals?
Yeah, I'm thinking about multi-sig and colored coins. Basically, for a project to be completely decentralized, like what the guys said, we need multi-sig on bridges and on wallets, especially on pre-mined funds for the projects, the project funds. And if we also can have colored coins for DAO decision-making in order to avoid the decision-making process to be centralized, which is basically the whole problem in the world that we live in. The whole problem, the world that we live in, is based on centralized decision making. I mean, that's what crypto came out of to solve. Crypto should be decentralized. So we should definitely focus on the DAO decentralization via multisigs and colored coins. And if there's additional technology that I'm not aware of, but definitely that's the core concept of crypto.
Yeah, one of the things that I could say in terms of risk mitigation is we have a bridge for Pirate for the wrapped token on BSC. So a user can, you know, transfer their actual R over to BSC and collect and receive more on the opposite side. Now, we didn't believe in minting functions and burn functions and such, because we've seen too many times where, you know, the code for, say, any given project seems solid, and then all of a sudden that function gets somehow taken advantage of, and then additional tokens are either burnt or released when it shouldn't be. So what we decided to do was use a vault called Gnosis, which is a multi-sig vault, and we threw in I think it was 10% of the minted tokens into the bridge itself, and then the remaining tokens we locked in the multi-sig vault and had seven users put their keys in. So essentially you need four out of the seven to be able to move any sort of funds from the vault. So that's the type of risk mitigation that we used in order to prevent anybody from trying to steal tokens and so forth.
Yeah, I can say that on our projects that we use a variety. We try to keep some of the security processes pretty tightly controlled and not necessarily published in some cases. And you know, you have to know who your people are, and the level of responsibility should probably inside of a project should probably be tied to how well known they are, you know, how doxed they are, for one thing, and also I guess corresponding to their reputation over time as well, you know. And you know, because there are a lot of cases that surprise me with exchanges, say, where they aren't, in my opinion, properly managing the hot wallets, that they are, you know, not segregating or breaking apart the wallets so that you can, so they at least, and this is, you know, for centralized exchanges, of course, but they should be using the tech to hold, you know, only reasonable balances that might be needed in a general spike for trading volume in the hot wallet. And yet a lot of them are just keeping everything in hot wallets. We do use Gnosis on Den.Social for all of the DAO functionality. We're working into getting, because you know, we're a hybrid environment, so we have known, I guess, transparency as to what is decentralized and what is not. And part of, like, say, the management of the funds that are held by the DAO itself, that is DEN, are all managed in a decentralized Gnosis multi-sig wallet. But there are a lot of things that I don't know if we get into outside of project, but how individuals can protect themselves that we've learned a lot about since 2016, right? So, and that surprisingly, most projects aren't using the tech for a lot of things they should be.
Yeah, I agree. And going along that path, what are some of the risks that projects face that aren't really thought of? Like, they may not be, you know, huge risks in, per se, in terms of, you know, user funds or project funds, things like that. But especially with small projects, what are some risks that they inherently face that aren't really able to be mitigated? And one example I can think of off the top of my head is what Chris said earlier about, you know, the website domain, you know, with hosting and such. But aside from that, what other things are inherent risks to small projects or even large projects as well that most people don't think of?
I would say a huge one that's simple but extremely important is communications. And, you know, part of that could be the website. And although we haven't seen the necessity to do it yet on any of the projects that we've had, you know, you could do a decentralized hosting of the main, maybe the Web3 interface. So maybe you could have a standard, you know, website for normies. But when you get into anything that would be related to interacting on-chain, that maybe it would be the decentralized hosting. But then you still have, you could use ENS or something else, too, for pointing to things. But probably the simplest thing that surprises the heck out of me that most projects don't do, especially projects that are in certain phases, like say if there's if it's brand new, or if there is a lot of expected announcements around a launch or something, that most crypto projects have experienced some form, obviously either internally or externally, of impersonation of leaders, things like that, and. You know, some of the solutions, like say on Telegram and elsewhere, are adding things to their profile. I will not DM you, that type of thing. And you know, it's frustrating that a lot of the traditional world platforms for communications, like Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Discord, don't really, in my opinion, have very, very much quality in their identity controls. Where, you know, you wouldn't have to have even blockchain-related or crypto-related capabilities, but you could have registered, declared, known public keys. And that, you know, we used this back in 2016 because we had a year after we left Disney where it was open source world and we weren't doing anything, you know, like putting out tokens or anything else. And all of a sudden, when we started to veer down there, we got very focused on educating the community that, hey, if ever we have an important announcement, about tokens or about releases or about anything else, and it's not signed, cryptographically signed with this Bitcoin. In fact, it was a Bitcoin address at the time. Then it's fake, right? And it was beautiful because then when we would have people coming in with a very well-crafted impersonation of me because Slack sucks. People, and it would be in the middle of the night when our whole team was asleep on West Coast US. And everybody, though, in the community from around the world would say, that's fake, that's not Joe, it's not signed, right? And that was remarkably effective because, you know, we'd already educated people. They knew not to trust something unless it was signed with that key. And it was amazingly powerful. We, during that entire, you know, think about this. This is in the late 2017 stage of token sales. We did not have a single community member lose a dollar or any other value to any of those scam artists that would come in and try to get people to, you know, throw in, a couple of grand on, oh my gosh, they just did a surprise announcement of a token sale, right? and if the rest of the world just did that, you would have surprise. You would have a significantly less or fewer mistaken issues. So anyway, that's a huge one, and that's already doable in various ways.
Yeah, going along the same line with communications, specifically in Telegram, there's a ridiculous amount of impersonators for various projects and so forth. And you'll see a lot, especially if you own a project or part of a project team, you'll get tons of messages from supposedly people that are part of an exchange and looking for quote unquote listings. Or if you're an individual, you may get a message from an impersonator that's supposedly on the team of one of the Telegram chats that you're in. And as hard as it is sometimes to see through that, the best way to really, that I found at least, to kind of figure out who you're actually talking to is to talk in, you know, the main chat for that, the person that they're supposedly representing, and then find that person and say, ask if they've messaged you, so forth. Or what you could also do is click on that person's name and start a chat with them and see if it brings up that exact same chat. If it does, then you're probably dealing with that correct person. But that's still, you know, a few things here and there that, you know, that a spammer could do to, you know, cover their tracks a little bit more to make it really seem like they're the person that they're trying to impersonate. So there's a lot of risk that goes along with that, and not much you can really do aside from just verify.
So I have a little comment on that, speaking about the community. We found out about our hack through a community member. So again, you know, being a smaller project with, you know, resource constrained, we had a user reach out and say, hey, by the way, did you guys know this was going on? He was digging around and looking around or whatever. And you know, we immediately gave it to our dev team. And then they started poking around and they said, oh, my gosh, this is not good. And so like the guys at Dragon said the same thing about having people put up a fake key or download it. So thinking about what a smaller project could do that's cost effective would be, you know, encouraging community, I don't want to say tattletales because that sounds so dumb, but if you see, you know, if you have a philosophy in the community or an attitude in the community, look, if you see something you don't like or looks a little bit fishy, speak up, you know, and that sometimes gets drowned out with the noise, right? You've got a lot of newbies coming in and what's MetaMask and how come this guy told me he wants my keys? And so you fight so much of that garbage, right, on Telegram with people trying to get that are coming in and trying to impersonate and all that. And so you have to cut through some of the noise. But I would say having an attitude within your community to say, look, you know, we're all in this together. And our community, speaking of which, from was shockingly supportive. I think out of everything that happened, we had one person out of hundreds, maybe thousands of wallet holders that said, you guys suck. Everybody was great and supportive. So, you know, in embracing your community and saying, look, We are resource constrained. We need eyes. You're part of this community. If you see something you don't like, let us know. And maybe it might be more just thinking out loud than just saying, well, you know, hit a mod on Telegram or Discord and let, you know, the mod, the guy with the mod symbol on his name know that something's weird. Maybe putting up like some type of, I don't know, some type of email, or not an email, because that's can be difficult to deal with. Some type of form page, or I don't know, something to encourage people if they see something that doesn't look right, right? That could be cheap, insurance. So I just wanted to kind of dovetail in on the community involvement, and that's what saved us. God knows how long it would have gone even farther than it should have without the community members speaking up, you know? So
100% Terry, community is the entire reason we exist. So I agree with you there, and we need to do our best to internally police ourselves so that we can remain as functional as possible.
I think we should, as like the decentralized crypto community, we should be doing like decentralized communication platforms, like basically a reputation management system, like the PGP key servers. So we have like a key server, and all the projects can put the team members' keys on that server. And with that communication platform, when you send something, the community can actually verify that that was the actual sender. So that's the beauty of PGP. I like that. And I think we should definitely do that in the crypto community, because social media is full of scams and full of scammers, and you cannot control it. And the majority of people won't verify, because there's it's hard for the normal user to actually verify it. And basically, social media is not built for that. So I think we should, basically, the crypto community should build an alternative social communication platforms that you actually can manage the reputation. You can actually verify the identity of people based on keys, PGP keys, and signatures. That's my thought.
Absolutely. No, that's a fantastic idea. Because one thing is, whether we realize or not, the end user is the one that's always affected every single time, right? Because not only does the end user have to deal with, you know, scammers themselves and impersonators from projects that DM them and so forth, but with all the inherent risks that go on within a project itself, without proper mitigation practices, you know, while the team and the project itself gets messed up, those end users have their own funds tied into that project, whether they have the project's tokens or if they're staking something from the project, or whatever you name it, they're the ones who always get affected. So, like I said, whether we realize or not, by mitigating risks from within a project, we're actually not only helping out the project, but we're also helping out the end user as well.
Yes, we're strengthening the whole community. Yeah, I agree. So basically, we should change the notion, like all the current notion in the crypto community. Like if a project does an announcement, they just do an announcement on typical social media. My idea would be like, okay, put it on social media, because the majority of users are on social media. That's fine. But we should put something like a link down that they can click and they can verify based on key servers, based on signatures. Like a project cannot do an announcement without that link. Like community members can click on that link and they verify that this announcement is actually true. That's my thought.
Yeah, that's what we've done for quite a while, and it actually works. And you know, some people won't care. You know, some people won't care, but if they are about to spend money, they're more likely to look and/or to ask someone who might be more technically adept to see, is this legit? You know, but most of them, you know, most of the signature verifications are, you know, web based. And yes, there probably should be some better security and better UI on some of them, but it's still, there's at least something there. And as to the normies, I was surprised that they let us do it, but we included the first ever, this is Dragon Chain in 2017, probably it would have been in September or so, but we had a press release that was the first ever press release with a signed cryptographic message in it. And we did that on purpose where someone could cut and paste it directly out of the press release. It was interesting. In fact, yeah, I found the link here. I was like, I wonder if I can find that. But it was on the 2nd of October in 2017, the day that we actually released it, so that you could actually see the Bitcoin address from which it was signed, and you know, we had there was a way to verify it and everything else. Anyway,
as a final thought, what are some ways that users can protect themselves from risk within the crypto sphere in general?
Patience and education, right? Do your own research. At least know what you're doing. Risk what you are comfortable risking, given your level of knowledge about what you are going to risk it with and about how it's going to be used. Try not to be emotional. That's the other thing.
What about risks that they may not even know is a risk? Prime example is the common saying in crypto, not your keys, not your coins, right? So the risk that that's actually talking about is if you have your funds stored in an address where you don't actually control the private keys to, technically it's not your coins or tokens. It's not your funds. So that being said, centralized exchanges that people use, you know, those people don't actually own the private keys to their own funds in the wallets that are stored on there. So if you're not trading any funds, or if you're looking for a way to just, you know, store funds somewhere, depending on what coin or token it is, generally you want to download the official wallet from that project and store your funds there. Or if you have a multi-coin wallet that's, you know, reputable, and that has the coin or token that you're trying to store in built into it, you can store it there. As long as you own the private keys to that address and nobody else has that private key, you can pretty much consider yourself safe.
Yeah, and also, I can say about that. I'll make it real quick. You can, as projects, we can incentivize that. We created the time system specifically to incentivize normal people who didn't know that in 2017 prefer keeping their coins in a hardware wallet off out of an exchange, because especially back then there were so many hacks at the exchanges. So as projects, you can also incentivize people to do that, you know, in various ways. Anyway, sorry.
One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself is what you don't do, and that is never answer a direct message ever on Telegram. If somebody DMs you about trying to help you on the project, you're trying to get scammed. Don't answer it. That's with simple advice, but man, it goes a long way.
Another thing that I can think of is storing your funds on an offline wallet. You know, it sounds simple, like, you know, some sort of paper wallet or a wallet in which the keys are not stored on your computer. Because if your computer gets hacked, or if somebody steals your, say, you have it on a laptop, somebody steals it, you know, then your funds are pretty much gone. So one of the best things to do that I personally do is I back up all of my keys on a separate hard drive. I have them printed out on paper and stored somewhere safe. And on top of that, I just don't really use wallets that on my computer at all, unless I'm going to be transacting with those funds in some in a time period that's close. You know, there's no shortage of things that you can do to protect yourself from other users or hackers or you name it.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in a bank account, you would want the bank to have the utmost highest security level. Why wouldn't you do that in your crypto? Basically, and now a lot of people are having significant amount of their net worth in crypto. So I definitely support, and I personally do it. Like you said, back up your seed on offline and online different mediums. Like a seed, you can back up it like three times. You don't have to back up one seed like one time. You can do it on a piece of paper, on a metal sheet. There's like products like crypto steel. I like that. And you could do it on a USB drive. You can do it on a different hard drive. So you can do a lot of things, and you should do a lot of things. And one of the most newbie things that people actually do in crypto is the lack of understanding. They don't understand what crypto is all about, why crypto actually was invented in the first place. So they're doing a lot of bad decisions, bad investment decisions, and they're losing a lot of money. So they have to educate themselves, and they have to back up the seeds on multiple mediums, offline and online. And definitely do not listen anybody to social media influencers, because personally, the majority of them just sells like dreams, basically, and their pump and dump projects. Not all influencers, but a lot of them, and a lot of people lose money from just listening to influencers. So you have to invest in your education. That's the first thing and the most important thing.
Also, if you have the option for 2FA and things like that, that's also something that's very worthwhile. It may take a little bit longer to log into somewhere, but convenience usually results in a lack of security. So, because most people think, oh, nobody's going to get into my email because it'll ask me if that was me if I logged in. Not all the time. And your email can also get hacked too. It's been known to happen. So
by yes, 100%.
Security to where you need that extra piece to log in. I mean, it provides such additional security that it's at that point it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's not near impossible, but it's very, very difficult to, you know, tap into any account that you have if you have 2FA set up.
Yeah, of course. Like you have to do two-factor authentication on anything. Basically, on your email, that's the most important thing, because your email is connected to personally your whole digital identity. They can get into your exchanges from your email. So your email is like the cornerstone that you have to have the most security on. So definitely, yeah.
All right. Any last thoughts, comments, anything anybody wants to say before we go? All right. And by the way, guys, I'll be cutting out all like the dead spaces and stuff like that in the beginning and toward the end as well. So. I'll be cleaning up all the sound bites and everything.
Cool. But,
and then I'm gonna re-record the intro and everything as well, because I know I kind of fucked up on that. So
it sound fine to me.
All right, cool. And I'll record an outro as well, so this way it's all clear and clean. But anyways, appreciate it, guys. That was pretty awesome. There's a lot of good stuff in there that I think people can learn from. So,
yeah, great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Talk later. Bye.
Later. Oh, by the way, later. Yep. Are you doing Are you doing the talk next week, Joe?
Oh, which talk?
About Dragon Den.
Oh, maybe I don't know about it. I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't know if Bit By told you, but basically the idea that was brought up and everyone kind of agreed on is that essentially we have, 10 projects in the BPSAA now.
Yes.
Everyone.
Yes, she did tell me. I didn't realize. We can come in whenever it makes sense. Next week's fine, and kind of give the high level background of how it works, or what's already there, and then we can talk about if we want anything different, because maybe we need something just tinge custom, but definitely, yeah, I will do it, because in my opinion, it could be a good way for us. We could still keep all the Discord and everything else, but if there is a need to decide, anything, then it can be on chain, and there it is, right? So, yeah, that would be good.
Cool. All right. Cool. See you next week then.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Appreciate it, guys.
Bye bye. Thanks.
Bye. And Cax, go ahead and shoot me over the recording, and then I'll go ahead and modify it tonight.